Trading in futures products entails significant risk of loss, which must be understood prior to trading and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Good morning, everybody. It's Thursday, April 18th, 5:27 a.m. Central Time. Grain markets are mixed this morning. Fairly quiet overnight trade. May corn futures down one at 429 and a quarter. May soybeans down six and a half at 1143. May Chicago wheat up two and a half at 539 and a half. May Kansas City wheat up three and a half at 576 and a quarter. May spring wheat up six and a quarter at 639 and a half. Let's start off with this Biden tariff story.
So President Joe Biden is calling for higher tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum imports. On Wednesday, Biden suggested raising the tariff rate from 7.5% all the way up to 25%. The increase would be in addition to a separate 25% tariff on steel and a 10% tariff on aluminum that was put in place under the Trump administration. The new tariffs would only affect 0.6% of U.S. steel demand. Chinese steel imports declined 8.2% year over year in 2023 due to tariffs that are already in place. In addition to increasing tariffs, Biden also called on Mexico to inhibit the flow of Chinese steel into the U.S. through its borders.
Biden is doing Trump stuff. And why is he doing Trump stuff? There are two reasons. And depending on how much faith you have in what a politician says or what their motives are, there's two different reasons here. And maybe both can be true. The first one is this. This is a quote from the White House National Economic Council. In manufacturing sectors like steel, China's already producing more than China or the world can easily absorb. China's subsidies and other forms of support leads to exports flooding the global market at artificially low prices, undercutting American steel. So that sort of protectionist, let's be pro-USA, that's a good motive, I suppose. The other thing is that, of course, we have an election coming up, and Biden and Trump are both very much competing for union support. Biden said this at the Pittsburgh headquarters of the United Steelworkers, which is a union that has a lot of power and a lot of sway. So is this simply political bullshit talk, or is this for real that he's going to do this? I don't know. I don't have an opinion on which one of those is true. Is he just trying to get votes here through talk, or is he actually interested in doing the tariffs and proceeding with this? I don't know. When it comes to ag exports, I am still of the opinion that China is going to be a low-cost buyer based on experience and what we've seen in recent years. If U.S. soybeans are competitive, if U.S. corn is competitive to China, they will buy it. And we just haven't been, especially in the case of soybeans. That being said, I don't think this sort of stuff, the acreage in Arkansas that we talked about, there's all this political stuff out there, political tensions with China, they're never going to end. But I think they're a low-cost buyer, and we're not the low-cost seller right now. That's the deal.
The Rosario Grains Exchange will likely further reduce its estimate for Argentina's corn crop. Last week, the exchange cut its forecast for the crop by about 11% to 50.5 million metric tons due to a stunt disease spread by leafhoppers. The insects, which have been present in the crop since March, have caused the crop to become badly dented. Due to hot, humid conditions, this year's outbreak has been significantly worse than other years. Some areas are reporting losses between 40 and 50% when normally losses only reach 5%. Argentina's corn crop is 15.3% harvested.
I threw together this graphic this morning. This is not my favorite graphic. Don't get mad at me about this graphic. It's kind of crude, but you've got big differences between USDA and their South American production estimates for both Argentina and Brazil and the entities in South America. I've got the CONAB numbers in here for Brazil and the Rosario Grain Exchange numbers in here for Argentina. So in the case of Argentina corn, USDA is 4.5 million metric tons or 177 million bushels higher than the Rosario Grain Exchange. In the case of Argentina soybeans, they're pretty close. In Brazil corn, you've got a huge discrepancy. USDA is 13 million metric tons or 516 million bushels higher. In the case of Brazil soybeans, 155 versus 146 and a half. That's a difference of 8.5 million metric tons. USDA is 312 million bushels higher than CONAB. So when you look at the corn numbers combined, I mean, you're talking, 700 million bushels almost In the case of soybeans combined, you're talking north of 250. I mean, those are substantial numbers that would move the needle, and they're on the balance sheet at least. And there's this debate going on. Who's right? Is it the USDA World Board? Is it CONAB? Is it Rosario? We don't know, and we'll probably never know. The thing that would steer me in maybe one direction or the other would just be export pricing. I've always been of the opinion that the markets, and the cash markets in particular, at the end of the day, tell the tale. And the tale right now is that, you know, Brazil still has cheaper beans than what the U.S. can offer. They're pretty competitive in corn. But if USDA were to come down ultimately to these CONAB or Rosario numbers, I think it has an impact on the market. I do. It just doesn't seem like the trade is interested in hearing about or trading these numbers from the South American entities. It seems like they're more interested in trading the USDA numbers. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know.
So if you guys have not checked out our premium content, you sure need to do so. Joe, can you tell me about the video you put together with Matt Bennett yesterday?
Matt was on yesterday. We talked about a lot of things. Talked about planting progress and what's going on kind of around the country. Cash corn market basis situation. The kind of shift in the moisture situation in the Western Corn Belt. It's raining in Iowa this morning. And we talked about that a little bit. Pete Meyer and I mentioned accumulators kind of in passing on, I think, Tuesday. And Matt and I kind of elaborated on our likes and dislikes about that sort of contract in particular, went into a little bit of detail. If you guys want to see the premium stuff, go to standardgrain.com. You can sign up this morning. This is a $50 per month subscription. You can cancel at any time. There's no other fee. There's no other obligation. Nobody tried to sell you anything else. If you guys like the YouTube channel or you like the podcast, you'll love the premium stuff. You know, here in the public free stuff, we do a news show, basically. We run through the news. In the premium stuff, we do a lot of analysis. We talk about grain marketing very specifically. We get into longer form conversations on topics like carbon capture, grain marketing, policy, all sorts of different stuff. So check this deal out today. If you sign up, I'll forward you a copy of this morning's email. It includes the 6 most recent premium videos. Remember, guys, this is the best way to support what we're doing here. This is the only way that we're able to wake up and do the podcast and YouTube every day, is because of premium subs. We don't have sponsors or corporate backing or anything like that. So support independent media. Check this deal out, and I think you'll like it.
U.S. ethanol production declined last week. Weekly output of 1 million barrels was down 7% on the week, but up 2.5% versus the same week last year. Ethanol stocks were pegged at 26.1 million barrels. The print was down marginally compared to the previous week, but up 3.8% compared to the same week last year. Implied gasoline demand was up slightly compared to the previous week, but down 3.1% versus the same week last year. On average, over the last 4 weeks, implied U.S. gasoline demand is down 3.1% versus the same period last year.
That's not the best ethanol production number in the world. I'm told that there were several plants across the Corn Belt who took some downtime for maintenance, which is normal during planting because there's not a lot of grain movement. Same thing happens during harvest oftentimes. This is not a margin thing. It's a maintenance thing. So I would imagine that you bounce back here the next couple of weeks. I mean, you could see some lower numbers, I guess, during planting. All that being said, we're still on track to meet or exceed USDA's number for corn ethanol demand. And that's a bright spot as far as the demand base is concerned, certainly.
Oil prices declined by more than 3% on Wednesday. WTI crude fell 3.1% to $82.69 per barrel. So far this week, WTI has lost 3.4%. After Iran launched an attack on Israel this past weekend, the market was expecting possible supply disruptions, but Israel has yet to launch a counterattack, which has kept tensions in check and eased supply concerns. However, officials familiar with the situation say that Israel will retaliate against Iran at some point.
Most of the country does not ever really want to see higher crude prices because it means inflation and higher prices at the pump, which is a big item of sensitivity for the general public. But for you guys, a crude rally could be very good. If it rallies enough and brings the broader commodity complex along with it, it could bring the grains along with it, which would be very, very helpful and would be a net positive for you guys, even though fuel prices would be up and your inputs would be up. This Bloomberg Commodity Index that I track is still very much in a sideways kind of holding pattern here. We've seen some strength. We're down this week. If you break out above, you know, that 106-ish, 107 level on my chart, and those are just imaginary lines on a chart, maybe that looks a little bit better. So, you know, for the moment, this, they're not, the crude trade in the energy trade. They're just not confident that this Middle East thing is going to escalate. And I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that seems to be the market's opinion.
Ukraine produced 60 million metric tons of grain last year. Of the total, 22.2 million metric tons was wheat, 30.5 million metric tons was corn, and 5.7 million metric tons was barley. Ukraine's grain production is expected to fall by about 13% this year to 52 million metric tons. Corn production is slated to drop by about 11%. Wheat is anticipated to drop by about 14%, and barley is slated to decline by approximately 12%. The decline in production is attributed to fewer planted acres.
Here's a chart of Ukraine corn and wheat production. So these are USDA estimates. And then for new crop, I threw in these, I don't know if they're official estimates from the ag ministry, but that's what they were talking about anyways. So that spike in corn production, 21-22 up to 42 million, that was pre-invasion. And then it dropped to 27 million post-invasion, 22-23, and has declined since. You know, prior to this war, Ukraine had been trending higher and sharply higher as a corn producer, and now they're going in the opposite direction. If that wheat number's right that they're talking about for new crop, 19 million metric tons, that would be the lowest since like 2013. So their production has fallen off. I don't know exactly what's going on in the world of Ukrainian agriculture. I suppose it's somewhat impressive that given the war, I mean, that the numbers are still as high as they are, but that's kind of how it looks. What did cattle do yesterday?
They were mostly lower. Feeders were 70 cents lower to 7 cents higher. Live cattle were 60 cents lower to 45 cents higher. Box beef was also lower on Wednesday. Choice ended the day at 296.78. That was down $1.24. Select ended the day at 290.88. That was down $1.76.
Outside markets, U.S. dollars off just a little bit. Stocks are marginally higher. Bonds are about flat. Crude oil is down another 82 cents at 81.87. In the May WTI. Have a great day, guys. We'll talk to you on Friday.